there's a process that I believe in, that we believe in as an offensive staff, that we're adhering to this springtime, and we're going to stay true to that. How we're going to develop that position in particular, and those guys are doing a great job working hard right now.
That is your Bears EMT, your Bears savior, Ben Johnson, talking this week, OTAs, talking about quarterback, make it important, and how we're going to get this thing right. Welcome and welcome back. Saturday Suckage, I'm Steve Rosenblum. Now joining me on the Circus Sports Illinois hotline is Nicholas Moriano, Bears beat writer for the Bigs. Download the Circa app today. Nicholas, thanks for joining me today. Thanks for taking time out on this holiday weekend. How are you?
Doing well. How about yourself there, Steve?
I am so groovy, I could teach it. Now, where's Caleb, and why is he not out front explaining this?
You know, that's a great question. I would have appreciated to hear Caleb on Wednesday when we had our media availability at House Hall, but it was good, I think, that they had Ben Johnson speak on, you know, the story that came out about Caleb not wanting to be a Bear prior to the draft. But, you know, the longer that he doesn't speak, the longer this becomes an actual story. So hopefully next week when we get a chance to be back at House Hall, we do hear from Caleb Williams.
Is this Caleb not wanting to speak? Is this Carl Williams saying don't speak? Is this the Bears preventing him from doing it? Do you have any idea why he hasn't, when previously he has handled so much so well and so easily, he can be disarming. He can be disarming with his transparency. And yet he's not out there. I would take advantage of that asset if I were the Bears or his father or Caleb. Do you know who and why this isn't happening?
Yes, yeah, so I don't know the who and why, as to, you know, why Caleb has not been upfront and spoken about it yet. But like you were saying, like he's been pretty well with the media in terms of everything he had to deal with last year. I mean, you have your head coach fired, you have your offensive coordinator fired, but, you know, Caleb Williams, even being a rookie, handled those adverse situations in front of the media, I thought, pretty well for a guy that was in his first year in the NFL. So don't know why he hasn't spoken, but I think when he does get that opportunity, he'll do what he's shown in the past.
Nicholas Moriano is my guest, Bears beat writer for the Bigs, and he's on the Score. We're talking Bears. What did you think of what you saw from Ben Johnson, one practice, but you got, I guess, an eyeful. I'm not sure what you came away with, so why don't you share it with the class?
Yeah, you know, just seeing Ben Johnson, like, he's a guy, especially inside the Walter Payton Center, I think your voice kind of amplifies a little bit when you're yelling at guys, but you saw that often. Didn't matter whether you were Cole Kmet, who's obviously been a veteran on this team, Jihadi Walker from Texas A&M, one of the rookie guys here. Like, he's in there letting these players know that if you're doing something wrong, we're going to address it right then and there. We're going to blow the whistle if you're in the huddle and things aren't going at the time and speed that they need to be happening with. So I think it was just honestly refreshing to see that. It's not that it didn't happen in the last regime, but this is the second day of OTAs, and Ben Johnson's already establishing this kind of culture and this precedent that if something is not done right, we're going to address it and not let it linger as it gets later on into the season.
But apparently it didn't happen in the last regime. That was what the players went to Eberflus with and said, we want to be coached. Somebody stop the practice when a little detail is not being carried out correctly, right? Isn't that what happened last year? Wasn't that the reason for the ruckus in the middle of the, you know, 3-4 games into the season?
Yeah, and I think it just was a consistency aspect of it, too. Like, there would be times where, you know, obviously you're correcting things, but it wasn't probably as consistent as it should have been. And happening now in OTAs is a good sign of how this coaching staff, because it's not just Ben Johnson there, Steve. It's Eric Bieniemy. It's Antoine Randle-El, Al Harris. It's a bunch of these coaches that all have this similar coaching style that are being implemented throughout all these position groups. So it's good that it is happening now. It's good that you're hard on the players now. So if you turn the switch later on in the season, it's like, where is that coming from? Well, it came from right in the beginning of OTAs here in mid-May.
Nicholas Moriano is my guest. He's a Bears beat writer for the Bigs. We're talking Bears here on the Score on Saturday Suckage. You heard from several other players. What did you think? What caught your ear? What did you think was most impactful or most interesting?
Yeah, so, I mean, like you said, we did hear from a couple of the players. And let's just start with Tremaine Edmonds. I think it's going to be interesting to see how he's being implemented in Dennis Allen's defense, because he played a lot of the mic last year with Eberflus. But in this defense with Dennis Allen, he said knowing more position flexibility is just going to help him become more of a playmaker. And I think at this point, 2 years into his Bears career, we just need to see more impact plays from a guy that's, you know, being well paid for his position. And you just want to see if maybe with Dennis Allen's defense, having him play the mic at times, play the will, that will accentuate what he can do as a football player. So I think Tremaine Edmonds, like, highlighting that with Dennis Allen's defense is going to be something that we have to wait and see how it looks. But I am intrigued to see what a guy like Tremaine Edmonds can do now that he has a, you know, a fresh set of eyes with Dennis Allen as his D coordinator.
So one practice, one off season team activity, however it was, Grady Jarrett's always going to seem to have a voice that resonates somehow. I don't know. His words will seem to sometimes either be bold or capital letters. He's just going to be a guy. What'd you make of what Grady Jarrett had to say about different things this week?
Yeah, he has a presence and energy to him. And I mean, this is just being felt in the, you know, in the press conference room, but there were a couple plays even in that OTA practice where Grady Jarrett's in the backfield, and look, there's no pads, and you know the offense is still working on a lot of different things in this offense. But he is somebody that's got, I think, going to be such a great asset to rookie Shamar Turner. And Shamar Turner's also got a little bit of that energy with him. And you know, Grady spoke on, you know, what Shamar Turner can do as a player, having that quick get off, and I think that's going to be a good mentor for him having Grady Jarrett. But I also like what Grady Jarrett had to say about Jervon Dexter and taking that leadership role now that he's in year three with the Bears on that defensive line. It was Jervon Dexter that reached out to Grady Jarrett to go work out with him down in Florida. So I think that's great that you're having other defensive linemen reach out to a guy like Grady. But I'm looking forward to seeing how his veteran presence, his leadership, can really impact a guy like Shamar Turner, who I think can do some good things even in year one for the Bears defensive line.
Well, he likes to play violent, and that would be a very entertaining thing to see, I believe, from the Bears defense. But Jervon Dexter was a guy, you know, in the first year, Jalen Carter had like 6, 7, 8 games of he's all everything. Look at him. Look at it. And then he fell off the face of the NFL. And Jervon Dexter, meanwhile, had a really good second half. And I really expected more from Jervon Dexter. And I thought he would have, you know, maybe he's not going to be Jalen Carter because that defense, the Bears defense, isn't anything like the Eagles defense. And they had a better coach in Philadelphia. But why did Jervon Dexter fall off in given the opportunity to play a singularly important position in that defense? And what does that mean coming into this year?
Yeah, so I think the big – look, this is actually – it shouldn't take one player to impact an entire defense. But losing Andrew Billings in that Arizona Cardinals game in the third quarter, ever since that player went down, you saw a trickle-down effect. It wasn't just Jervon Dexter. The linebackers weren't as effective. The secondary wasn't as effective. But it really was Andrew Billings and his ability to stop the run. And obviously he's going to be lined up a lot of times next to Jervon Dexter, because in that first half of the season – Jervon was getting, you know, a bunch of sacks. And I remember asking him in the locker room, like, his goal was to get 8. That was the goal going into the 2024 season. He was well on pace to do that. And obviously he didn't reach that goal. But it was, I think, a big part of that was losing a guy like Andrew Billings. Also, you know, Jaquan Brisker being a huge guy in run defense, I think that also impacts the entire defense there. But if you have a healthy Andrew Billings, obviously reinforce the defensive line with a Grady Jarrett, drafted Shamar Turner, that I think is going to make Jervon Dexter a lot more effective. And so I think if you have that going into year three for him, I think you'll see a way better, more consistent Jervon Dexter.
All right, you bring up Jaquan Brisker, and it's an excellent name to bring up. Who's going to be Jaquan Brisker this year? Because he's not going to be. I don't think he ever plays again. I don't see that happening. Who plays Jaquan Brisker?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good question. I mean, you had a bunch of different guys at different times still in for him. And, you know, maybe it's a guy like Elijah Hicks. You have Jonathan Owens. But for Jaquan, I wonder if he's going to be somebody that wears that Guardian helmet as he kind of goes into this season. We saw that even in this first OTA practice. And even if you have one of those on, it doesn't mean that, you know, Jaquan's going to stay healthy or avoid some of those concussion issues. But, yeah, that's who you're probably looking at, the two guys I just named, because at some point in the season you almost expect Jaquan not to be out there. But he does affect the defense in a lot of different ways when he is available, being a run defender. He was making a bunch of PBUs early on before he went down in that Carolina game. So those guys that are on the back end right now, if you're an Elijah Hicks, Jonathan Owens, anybody like that, you should feel like at some point you're probably going to have to go in and play. But the hope is that Jaquan can, you know, just stack some games together, get his head out of some of these tackles, and, you know, put together what could be a good season for him if he can stay healthy.
Montez Sweat season, good, bad, excusable, inexcusable, getting paid too much money or just didn't have any help? And should a guy who's characterized as a multiplier need a bunch of help? What do you make of that? Because he seems to be, he needs to trigger that defense, whatever they did with Grady Jarrett and Dio Odengbo. Montez Sweat has to start everything, right? Isn't he the triggering incident?
No, and I mean, look, he should be that multiplier. And last season, I think Montez was just dealing with some injuries, but that still doesn't, you know, take away what the impact, the effect he should have. I know that they didn't have as many quality pass rushers and consistent pass rushers last season outside of Montez, but he does need to return back to form, because if Montez doesn't have the season that, you know, he should have as a guy that's being paid very well to be that multiplier, the Bears, this defense, I don't think is going to operate how it should with Dennis Allen. Like, the pass rush needs to marry with the corners playing press coverage. If they don't have any type of pass rush from a guy like Montez Sweat, like, even as good as Jalen Johnson, Kyler Gordon are, you can't cover guys forever. So Montez needs to step up. Obviously, you have Odengbo, who they paid pretty well to be somebody that, you know, can get better than 5 sacks, the most he's had in his career. So they need guys, those two specifically, to be that two-headed monster on the edges to really affect quarterbacks. But Montez, it was a down year. It was a down year, but it was also a guy that I think was dealing with a lot more injuries than, you know, was kind of highlighted.
Nicholas Moriano is my guest. He's a Bears beat writer for the Bigs. We're talking Bears here. Back to Caleb Williams, because the longer he stays quiet, the more conspiracy theories they get espoused, me espousing most of them. And I wonder if I connected, because there was the issue of he was left alone to watch tape. Does he not know how to watch tape? Did he not know even enough to help ask for help? And then what did he really know? And then there's the DJ Moore comment. Not the incident where he just kept running to the sidelines and sat on the bench and said, I'm done with this, but the comment about, well, we wanted to do it a certain way, but now we're going to do it Caleb's way, so we're going to do it Caleb's way, which seemed like a cry for help. I don't know if he was blinking his eyes, SOS. Do you connect those two now? What do you make of the idea of Caleb and tape watching?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, because I think there's just some details that we don't, that weren't addressed yet, and maybe they will be in the book, but if Caleb was, you know, watching film by himself or wasn't being direct on how to watch film, what was Caleb's response to that? Did he go actively asking these coaches for help, and was it just not being received? So I just think that part hasn't been revealed yet, and maybe next time, whenever Caleb speaks, we can get those details so we can have a better understanding of it. But I think now what Ben Johnson even talked about on Wednesday, like, they have a particular way of watching film. So that issue that was persisting in the last regime, mm-hmm, with Shane Waldron and guys like that, that's not going to be an issue. But it's still surprising and somewhat alarming that wouldn't be a focus, right? I think if for any quarterback in the NFL, you need to be able to know exactly what you're watching, how to watch it, so that you can be well prepared for that next football game. So I think there are some details left out there. And when asked about, like, the DJ Moore aspect of it, I don't know if I quite connect those two dots. I know DJ Moore was frustrated, though, just playing in an offense with a rookie quarterback, and things just weren't connected for him early on. And, you know, consistently throughout that year, he's a guy that coming off a career year in receiving yards, touchdowns, receptions. And then you come back into the 2024 season, new quarterback, new system, and it's not all there. So I think there was just some frustrating moments throughout the entirety of that season.
My guest is Nicholas Moriano. We're talking Bears here. He covers the Bears for the Bigs. We're talking Bears on the Score. 229 Texter said, you watch, Rosie, the drafted linebacker from Maryland. He's going to be the reverse Urlacher, moving from linebacker to strong safety. Mm. Well, he's got the speed, and speed helps you hit harder. And I have no idea if there's been any discussion about that, what he knows, what he might be able to do. But what do you think of that, right after we move Zorich to linebacker, perhaps? But what do you think about that, Nicholas?
Yeah, Ruben Hippolyte, he had a really good play there in the OTA practice where he would have lit up Kyle Manungai in the flat just because of that speed, getting over to the area, knowing where to be. But, you know, I haven't, you know, no one said anything about Ruben potentially moving to safety. And I think there's a great opportunity at that strong outside linebacker spot right now. Noah Sewell got some of the first reps there at that spot when they went in their base defense. But, you know, as of right now, if you're Ruben Hippolyte, you're looking at that potential spot, even though it's not going to be on the field very much, as an opportunity. So that's where I would, I think, for Ruben to have your most of your focus. But obviously, if that's something that the Dennis Allen sees in him because of that speed, you can get creative. It's his rookie season. I don't think you're going to see much of him unless he does get labeled that starting strong outside linebacker spot. But Kyler Gordon is going to be on the field for most of this defense. And if that's the case, you're not even going to have Noah Sewell, Ruben Hippolyte. But I'll tell you this, the speed is there, and you already made one play in OTA practice that caught my eye.
What did you make of, or if anything, of the way they let running backs run, again, without contact and all that kind of stuff? But you brought up Manungai and could have gotten lit up, and DeAndre Swift is still there, and Roschon Johnson. What do you make of, however they might be, anything to be learned from the one practice you saw?
You know, nothing, not any huge takeaways there, Steve, but I will say this, having Eric Bieniemy coaching those guys up, I think it's going to make a huge difference for this running back room. And I know, you know, it's pretty evident now that Ryan Poles was looking to upgrade that room with some potential day one, day two talent, in this last draft and didn't end up getting that. But the Eric Bieniemy effect, just seeing him in OTAs and some of these rookie mini camp practices, he's obviously one of those guys that has that edge to him. And I mean, he was probably the first coach we heard through rookie mini camp how vocal and how strict he can be with his coaching. Like, if they were running through the ladder drill and they had to hit a certain hole, he would yell at the running backs if they saw if their eyes met him before they got to a certain point crossing, you know, the certain gap. And that's attention to detail that I think was missing from the running backs as they were, you know, getting tackled behind the line of scrimmage. Didn't help that the interior of the offensive line wasn't set, but you could do stuff as a running back to manipulate linebackers and then cut back. So I think having Eric Bieniemy there will help Roschon Johnson, will help DeAndre Swift. Kyle Manungai, even being a seventh-round draft pick, I fully expect him to make this football team and be somewhat implemented throughout the offense in this upcoming season. So Eric Bieniemy, I think, is going to be a huge factor here.
We'll look forward to it. Look forward to talking to you again. Nicholas, thank you for your time. Appreciate it on a holiday weekend. Have a safe holiday.
Thank you. You too.
All right, Nicholas Moriano of the Bigs, Bears beat writer for the Bigs. Take a break. When we come back, Wake and Bake Club meeting with a guest, Dan Epstein, distinguished author of some terrific sports book, baseball books especially, and a co-author of Rolling Stone's 20 Greatest Pot-Themed Songs. We are at the intersection of weed and sports. There's a lot of traffic here. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Smoke weed every day.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
There's something important I was supposed to do today.
Dopest dope I've ever smoked. Hands down, dopest dope I've ever smoked.
Wake and Bake Club.
I love weed.
I smoke weed every second of every day.
Hey, I am your stoner.
Even Smokey the Bear is going, only you can. I knew this.
We're so high right now.
We're not low.
Open up the door, it's Dave.
Who?
Dave, D-A-V-E. Will you open up the door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man, Dave. Now, will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh. Hey. Smoke weed every day.
I had the flu one time. Did a gummy bear. I was like breakfast at Bernie's, you know, the dead guy.
Yeah.
I was supposed to go to a party, and I went to the party, and they sat me in a chair, and people got sat beside me, took pictures, and I'm sitting there like breakfast at Bernie's.
Smoke weed every day.
This meeting of the Wake and Bake Club has been called to order. Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum here, Saturday Suckers, the WB Club. A first for the Wake and Bake Club. A guest now joining me on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline is Dan Epstein, a distinguished author of terrific baseball books and a writer for Rolling Stone, CircaLasVegas.com. Dan, it has been far too long. Thank you for joining me on this holiday weekend. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Steve. How are you doing? It's great to hear from you.
I am groovy in the language of all of the cool kids. So there's my guy, Dan Epstein. Now, some of you may remember he's been on this show for most notably Big Hair and Plastic Grass. It was a book he wrote about baseball in the 70s, maybe the most impactful decade of baseball. That's what Dan was, the thesis that he wrote, and it contained Oscar Gamble's deathless line asking when he was talking about the Bronx Zoo playing for the Yankees. Some people don't think it be like it is, but it do. And I think we should all have that laminate for our wallets. And then Dan's name shows up in Rolling Stone magazine, one of four co-authors for the article, Pot Sounds, the 20 Greatest Songs About Weed. Well, this is it. This is when we finally need a guest. So when you winnowed it all down, and by the way, Puff the Magic Dragon was not there. When you winnowed it all down, how did this process go? How did you get to 20? And where did the generation of the idea to getting to 20, Dan?
You know, I mean, this is one of those things where I was just kind of brought in as a freelancer. So I was not, I think, as I recall, and, you know, my memory may be hazy for various reasons, but we were asked to submit our nominations for it. And I think, you know, you could have done a list of 100 songs easy. And most of the songs that I nominated were like, you know, fairly obscure jazz and blues songs from the 20s and 30s, you know, Fats Waller, You're a Viper, stuff like that, which, you know, I think the editors thought would not resonate with the kids as much as, say, an Afro Man song would. So basically, you know, that they came back to us and said, okay, this is what we've chosen, who wants what? And then, you know, we all kind of picked the ones we wanted to write about, and then, you know, they then polished up the blurbs we'd submitted and kind of went from there.
Okay. Dan Epstein is my guest, by the way. Distinguished author of terrific baseball books, not just Big Hair and Plastic Grass, but Stars and Strikes, and it was about the wonderful 1976. It was just a terrific book. He writes great baseball books. Go buy them. But now we're talking pot songs.
We are.
So this knocked me over. Of all the things in the piece, I have no idea if you wrote this because these blurbs were not signed or they weren't attributed to anybody. But this song knocked me over when I saw it on the list. Trash Panda, you want to play the song?
I was alone, I took a ride, I didn't know what I would find there. Another road where maybe I could see another kind of mind there. Ooh, then I suddenly see you. Ooh, Did I tell you I need you every single day of my life?
Got to get you into my life. Dan, that's supposed to be about a woman. It's the mid-60s. It's the Beatles. It's Revolver. That's about pot.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and it's that sort of, you know, I mean, there are several songs like that on this list where it's that sort of thrill of like when you first discover pot and like you want it, you know, you want to experience it in all kinds of situations and you can't believe like how amazing it's making the world look. I mean, I think the clue here in Got to Get You Into My Life is that, you know, see another kind of mind there. Paul was, Paul's mind was blown, man. And, he felt compelled to sing about it.
I ran this by several other potheads I know who are into music and know this kind of stuff. And they had no clue. It just seemed like a love song to many of us. And then,
it is a love song.
Dan Epstein is my guest. We're talking about Rolling Stones' 20 greatest weed theme pot songs. Now, this one I'm quite familiar with, and I knew exactly what it was about. One Toke Over the Line, Brewer and Shipley. And the story of that is they were stoned, which you would expect, and Tom Shipley uttered the line, "Man, I'm one toke over the line tonight." I love the organic generation of a song like that.
Yeah, and that they had the wherewithal to actually write that down as opposed to forget all about it the next day.
So when you saw the list, which ones did you end up writing? And you chose them for particular reasons. So which ones did you write that are on this list and why?
Well, I wrote the Paul one. I wrote Black Sabbath, Sweet Leaf, which, you know, I've always loved that line. I love you, Sweet Leaf, though you can't hear, which is, you know, to me, like that's total stoner logic. It's like, man, I would tell Pop that I love it, but he can't hear me, man. So that I definitely grabbed. I think the Legalize It, Peter Tosh, I read that one, which, you know, I remember that being quite scandalous when it was, you'd hear it on the radio in the 70s and 80s, like, you know, it's actually this pretty straight ahead plea for marijuana legalization. And back then we thought that was never actually going to happen. And look at us now.
What am I without Herb? And what is Herb without me? Peter Tosh said. And yeah. Okay.
And it's so true. And Rick James, Mary Jane, I believe I wrote that blurb as well. That's definitely one of my all-time favorite jams. I mean, that's one that just makes me feel high listening to it.
Dan Epstein is my guest. We're talking about Rolling Stones' Pot Sounds. This is the Wake and Bake Club, of course, and we're talking about the 20 best weed theme songs. So when you saw the list, were you surprised by some that made the cut, or did you actually have that got to get you into my life moment of, I didn't know that was about pot?
No, I think actually that was one of the ones I nominated. Mostly I was just really disappointed that Neil Diamond's Pot Smoker song did not make it on there, because that's one of my all-time favorite bizarre Neil Diamond tracks, and one that I used to put on mixtapes for people all the time, and they couldn't absolutely not believe it. And Steve, if you haven't heard the Pot Smoker song by Neil Diamond, I would recommend rectifying that as soon as possible.
I have not. I didn't know that he did that. Sweet Caroline, Bomp Bomp Bob. He's Mr. Eighth Inning in Boston. What? There's a, where, great. Share with the class.
It's from his 1968 album, Velvet Gloves and Spit. And it's this kind of bouncy sing-along song. It goes, pot, pot, give me some pot. And then between the verses, instead of like actual lyrics, it's taped, what do you call it? Like people making testimonials about how pot ruined their lives and like led them to harder stuff. And like, it's, you know, people saying like, you know, well, there was a lot of pressure in my family because my father was a rabbi. So I started getting high, and it's like, it has to be heard to be believed.
I guess so. I'll go research that out. One of the classics that I thought it was seemingly a novelty song. It never, Afro Man's Because I Got High.
Yeah.
That just recounts everything you could imagine doing wrong. I got no job. I got no place. That's quite a song, Afro Man. And because I got high. I don't know if that's, I haven't heard much of it lately. It's not one that gets replayed, but that's certainly a classic. You think you like that?
Yeah. And it was, and you know, certainly I think, he actually wound up making a Christmas album, which is all about, like, you know, getting high with Santa Claus and stuff. So he definitely played that one out as best he could. But yeah, no, it's funny. Like, that record, it's like 20 years old now, and it's still I think it still delivers the goods.
There was one thing that the Afro Man song reminds me of, something that somebody had sent me on. Friend of mine, AMS, had sent me something from TikTok that there's it sounds like a series, or it should be. I got so high that I, and then you're supposed to fill in the blank. And this particular TikTok was that I popped a gummy while walking into work, and I sat down in my cubicle and called in sick. Now, somebody, this sounds like it'd be ripe territory for writing songs or something.
Yeah. And you know, and I'm sure, like, everybody's got some kind of story like that. You know, it's, I mean, you know, for better or worse. I mean, I think my story is more like, you know, I got so high I went to White Hen Pantry and bought a tube of chocolate chip cookie dough and a jar of pickled herring and consumed both.
Dan.
And I live to tell.
Sick puppy. Dan Epstein is my guest. I've talked about the baseball books that I've read, and he's a wonderful author, wonderful writer. I don't want to let this interview end before you share with the class your newest publication. So roll it on out, dude.
Yeah, I've got a book out now called Now You're One of Us, The Incredible Story of Red Cross. And I wrote it with Jeff and Stephen McDonald, the brothers behind the cult band Red Cross, who have been around since the late 70s in one form or another and still make incredible music today out of L.A. And, you know, there's a lot of great pot stories in it, including and pot-related stories, including one where Jeff McDonald gets the crap beat out of him in rehab by Ellis Valentine, the former baseball great,
really?
who was in rehab with him at the same time. So that should give you an idea of the kind of stories we've got in this book.
Was that at a rehab house, or is this at some kind of meeting? And Ellis Valentine is a big guy.
He is. Yeah, this was like a facility where they were all, like, you know, in there for, you know, a month or so. And I think Jeff, that this was after Ellis's baseball career. So he was telling a lot of stories in there about, you know, about all the players freebasing on airplanes and things like that. But but Jeff called him out for bragging about his boat once too often. And Ellis ambushed him in the hall and punched him out.
Oh my goodness. That's Now You're One of Us. That's a go to Amazon. Dan Epstein, Now You're One of Us. And I love the idea. This is filled with those kinds of stories. And I'm sure that Ellis Valentine summed up the 80s pretty much. The baseball in the 80s was all kinds of powered by drugs and cocaine and things like that.
Yeah, powered by powders,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Dan, I really appreciate you joining me. Thanks for taking the time.
Steve, thanks for calling. Love talking to you. Best of luck with everything, as always.
You too. Be well. Thank you.
Right on, man.
Dan Epstein, author of so many. The newest one is Now You're One of Us, and you can find that on Amazon. And Ellis Valentine is beating up a musician, and they're in rehab. There you go. That kind of story. We had our friend, look, Trash Panda. Look, you're here. It's legendary. It's precedent setting. We had a guest during the Wake and Bake Club meeting. Look at us.
It's beautiful. What, everything's coming up, Millhouse.
Everything is everything.
The Because I Got High song, Afro Man, I remember, because, you know, the song's satirical, right? Like, the whole thing is,
right.
So I remember we had this assembly in high school. I think it was high school. Might have been junior high. And it was an anti-drug, anti-weed, you know, the dare
reefer assembly. Madness, yeah. Scared straight.
So, you know, this, because, you know, when I was growing up, it was all, they were still trying to scare you off the weed. And
the weed, and the wacky tobacco.
So they played that song during this assembly, but, like, clearly the people that put on this assembly didn't realize that the song is a satire, because they were trying to use it as an example of how weed can ruin your life.
See what'll happen?
Yeah. See what'll happen because I got high. It's like, and we're all like, the whole assembly was singing along. it was the funniest thing.
Afro Man. Well, there was one song that would seem to sum up everything about the 20 greatest weed theme songs. This would be the best of all. And of course, it would come from Willie Nelson. Now, he's doing this with Snoop Dogg, Kris Kristofferson, and Jamie Johnson. It was from 2012. So we'll send you out with this. Roll me up and smoke me when I die.
Roll me up and smoke me when I die. And if anyone don't like it, just look them in the eye. I didn't come here and I ain't leaving, so don't sit around and cry. Just roll me up and smoke me when I die.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score. Here's your host, Steve Rosenblum.
Welcome and welcome back. Big voice guy telling you, yep, it's here. Saturday Suckage. Steve Rosenblum here, taking you up. You know what? I have this announcement for you. Listen! The Cubs and Reds continue their series this afternoon in Cincinnati. Pre-game coverage begins at 2:35 with first pitch at 3:10 on The Score and the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. We have a lineup. Get your pencils and scorecards ready. For your Chicago Cubs, leading off and playing left field, Ian Happ. He always hits about 10 home runs every at-bat in Cincinnati, doesn't he? Isn't that what he does?
I was looking at this yesterday. His lifetime OPS at Great American Ballpark, this is a 50-plus game sample, 1.103. So he's basically Barry Bonds in Cincinnati.
Okay, Ian Happ, he's leading off. Then Kyle Tucker. That's good protection in the lineup. Kyle Tucker. Batting third, Seiya Suzuki. You know, he's right there. RBIs, home runs, he's right there. Batting fourth, as you'd expect, Dansby Swanson. What? Yeah. They are facing left-hander Andrew Abbott with a 1.80 ERA and 43 strikeouts. For those of you, and me and Studs were two of them, wondering why Shohei Crow Armstrong wasn't batting fourth. Dansby Swanson is batting fourth, playing short. Shohei Crow Armstrong will be batting fifth, playing center. Nico Horner, batting sixth, second base. Miguel Amaya, catching, batting seventh. Justin Turner, that's what you do. You throw that left-hander, then you get Justin Turner out there. And I still can't figure out. Is he just a runaway from ZZ Top, the Big Lebowski? That's what he is. And then batting ninth, Matt Shaw, and third base against, again, left-hander Andrew Abbott with a 1.80 ERA and 43 Ks. Colin Ray, 3-0 with a 2.38 ERA, 32 strikeouts. Colin Ray will be going for your Chicago Cubs. You can hear that on The Score. it's unbelievable right now, the kind of things that are coming out about Shohei Crow Armstrong, right? Most home runs since April 13th. Cal Raleigh, remember, he just went through a whole bunch. Seattle's catcher, a whole bunch. This, that, then he has 12 home runs since April 13th. Then Shohei Ohtani. Then Shohei Crow Armstrong. He has 14 home runs since April 13th, more than anybody else.
And 2 6 RBI games in the last week.
Well, he is the first Cubs player to have that in a calendar month. Calendar week, I guess, depending on how your calendar.
Sosa never did that? Really? Wow.
Nope, not on it or off it.
Or Derek Lee, Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, none of them ever. Wow.
2 6 RBI games in a calendar month since RBIs became an official stat in 1920. But wait, there's more. Now how much would you pay? Megan Monroe wrote in the Tribune, he became the third major leaguer since RBIs became an official stat in 1920 with at least 14 home runs, 14 stolen bases, and 45 RBIs through his team's first 51 games. Eric Davis in 1987, then with the Reds, and Ken Williams, not that Ken Williams, this one is with the St. Louis Browns from 1922. His 14 home runs have come in the last 34 games, making him just the third Cubs hitter since 1901 to record at least 14 across any 34-game single-season span, joining your guy, Sammy Sosa, twice, the most recent 2002, Hank Sauer twice, the most recent 1954.
Didn't Sammy Sosa that summer of 98, he hit 20 in a month? Is that what the number was?
I think that was.
In July or June?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was something.
Mm-hmm. His two games with at least six RBIs ties the Cubs' single-season record last done by Chris Bryant in 2016. We bring that up because Chris Bryant was an MVP that year. You're looking at a guy who should be in the MVP conversation right now. Only two other National League players 23 years or younger have recorded multiple games of six or more RBIs in a season, both of whom had two, so he's tied with Wilmer Flores and Mel Ott, who did it in 1930. Mel Ott's a Hall of Famer.
What a 1930s name, too. Mel Ott.
Mel Ott.
Now batting for the Yankees, Mel Ott.
No, they all had really good nicknames. That's what you had back then in baseball. Nicknames aren't any. Although, I do have a nickname here, the Yerminator, because PCA is like the Yerminator, except his manager doesn't hate him the way Yerminator's manager hated him. The Cubs beat the Reds yesterday 13-6. They were down 6-2, right?
6-2 in the seventh
inning.
And they
scored 11 runs at the end of the game.
Yeah, that was a weird game. So I was working the game last night, actually.
And you were mad about it. Don't take 3 hours to play a game.
3.5 hours. 3 hours and 26 minutes for a 9-inning game is way too long, even pre-pitch clock era. Okay? I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. No, it was a weird game because, yeah, going into the seventh inning, the Cubs hadn't done anything offensively outside of PCA's home run. They got a base runner here and there. They really weren't doing a damn thing. And then, boom, here's six runs. And then here's two more, and then here's two more, and they win the game going away.
There's four more right off the foul pole. And this, now you're talking about historic stuff where you have to go back several centuries for the Cubs. According to Sarah Langs of MLB.com, the Cubs, with 11 games of 10 runs or more in their first 51 games, is the most they've done it, most times they've done it since 1898. We're going back centuries. And we're going away now. We have to say thank you to Trash Panda, who's back. He got promoted and he performed well in his first game back, being promoted to Saturday Suckage after serving time in the midday show. Thank you for that.
Pleasure to be back. By the way, quick news, the Cubs DFA Julian Mayweather.
That's one bad outing. All right, Cubs baseball coming up soon on The Score.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.